Second hour at Aaron Donica Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We'll talk to Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders coming up at high noon. Kick back, have a little fun. We'll break down Titans and Ravens with him at noon. Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach, at 1 o'clock, followed by Mitch Light from The Athletic. So we'll get into heavy college football discussion in the final hour of the program. Right now, though, we stick with the theme of the 6-3 matchup up in Baltimore between the Ravens and the Titans. And to help us with all of that, Aaron Schatz is on the line with us, Football Outsiders. Aaron, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good today.
Thanks for doing this, as always. We're going to play a little exercise after speaking with you that, let me just start there. We can all agree that, in no particular order, Kansas City and Pittsburgh are the two best teams in the league today. Can we agree on that? Can we lock that in?
You have not looked at Football Outsiders team efficiency ratings.
Yeah.
Because I think Aaron would make a difference.
I thought when I was looking at that, that's what you had. No?
We have them as our Super Bowl favorites.
Super Bowl favorites. Oh.
Because of their records, but we actually have the two best teams in the league as New Orleans and Tampa Bay.
Oh, hold on, guys. Let's pull out our list that we have not unveiled yet. You said New Orleans and Tampa Bay. Okay, we will reveal where we had them on our list. So let's go a little bit further. Then why do you think that those teams, okay, with Drew Brees, of course, why are those teams better than Kansas City and Pittsburgh, better equipped? Why?
With Drew Brees, of course, obviously.
Yes.
But what we do to make our ratings is we break down every single play of the season. We compare it to how successful the average play is in that situation, and then we adjust based on opponent. So when we do that for the 2020 season, we end up with New Orleans number one, Tampa number two, Pittsburgh three, and Kansas City four. And then we have another rating that includes some sort of prior data from before the season, you know, because the fact is how good teams were last year does sort of help us predict the future a little bit. When we do that, it switches Kansas City and Pittsburgh, and that gives us Kansas City third. But we still have New Orleans and Tampa Bay first and second, with the asterisk, obviously, the injury to Drew Brees means a lot.
So what I've asked Willie and Chase to do is, okay, in what we're going to do, and not to dispute Football Outsiders, but for the sake of our game, it was going to be Pittsburgh, Kansas City, our one and two, no particular order. Let's come up with 3 through 10 today. And what's interesting, Aaron, is I think, you know, once you get to about 6, it starts getting really, really dicey. In other words, 7, maybe 8 through 10, 8, 9, and 10, there's a list of a pretty good amount of teams that you could put in at 8, 9, and 10, and it was hard to whittle it down at 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, it's a big smush of teams this year.
Yeah.
Like, there's no question about it. There's not a big difference between Team 6 and Team 11 in our ratings.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You could probably go even a little bit further than that. All right, so when you look at this matchup, let's start with the opponent of the Titans. When you look at the Ravens right now coming off a stinging loss in rainy Foxborough Sunday night, they've lost to good teams. They've lost to the Chiefs, they lost to the Steelers, and then this one on Sunday night. I don't know if you deem the Patriots a good team, but nonetheless,
no,
they lost. What do you see in the Ravens right now?
The Ravens are sort of the opposite of the Titans right now, right? The Titans are all offense. They have problems on defense. They have problems on special teams. Baltimore's offense has really disappointed this year, considering how good it was last year. Especially their passing game has been particularly bad. We have the Ravens' passing game ranked 22nd in the league right now, and their running game ranked 11th. But their defense is top 10, and their special teams is number 2. So this is really a game that matches two opposite teams.
We're talking to Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders. And Aaron, one thing I learned from you guys years ago was the whole concept of the curse of 370. And ever since then, you know, we've watched it with, of course, Eddie George in the early days, then Chris Johnson, and now, of course, Derrick Henry. And it's so critical that Derrick Henry is Derrick Henry for as long as possible. He had the most carries he's ever had in the first half of a season by about 30 carries. He's not in that danger zone, but if you know, it's tempting to give him the ball every time. And that's, I'm sure, where a lot of teams have gone wrong before. But have you tracked it, and have you noticed that it seems like they're trying to work in guys like Deontay Foreman and Jeremy McNichols to get 7 to 10 carries to try to keep from hitting that 370?
Yeah, especially like when the game was over this week at the end, they didn't like run Henry for the point of just running him, right? They brought in Foreman. And I think that's a good idea. Although, I mean, honestly, the curse of 370 has not been an issue for the last decade. I think there's been like one running back
yeah.
who's topped 370 carries in the season. Like, it just doesn't happen anymore. So my guess is that as time goes on, they'll include those guys a little bit. I don't think Henry's going to end up reaching 370 this year. Just nobody does anymore.
Isn't that interesting? You have to take credit for that on some level, don't you, Aaron? That people, they saw the numbers and they're like, we can't let this happen anymore.
I'll take a little bit of credit.
But you're right. Derrick Henry is the rare exception, right, of a running back that sort of changes the game enough when he's on. I mean, he is what makes that offense go for sure. So it is interesting that they're in this position, because if they wanted to go old school, he could get up into that range for sure if they give it to him 25 times a game.
Yeah, I mean, they just, first of all, they're more balanced with the pass than that. Like, even though he leads the league in carries, right, the passing game is still really important to this team, especially the play-action passing game. So they don't need to run him into the ground in order for the play-action passing game to work. I think they're going to be okay in the long run there.
For people, I should have asked you this first, Aaron, for people that are not familiar with the curse of 370, let people give us the real quick version of where you came up with that and what the numbers tell you.
Yeah, it's basically the idea was any running back who gets over 370 carries in the season, or 390 roughly if you include the playoffs, had a tendency to break down the following year. It's not a hard and fast rule. It's not a hard and fast line, right? The basic idea is don't overuse your running backs. But the fact is running backs haven't been overused for the last few years. I mean, Henry led the league in carries last year and only had 303.
Right. So the times have changed, as you've been saying. Another thing that I've noticed that's very different in your efficiency numbers, the Titans are famous for having wide receivers ranked so low. You know, whoever the lowest five are in past years, even on some decent Titans teams, their wide receivers didn't tend to rank very high. That has changed. Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, who maybe aren't spectacular, but relative to past wide receiver groups, and it just sort of goes in line with what you're saying, it's a balanced offense for the Titans. Those guys have ranked much better.
First of all, just to give respect, Derek Mason may have been the most underrated player of that entire decade of the 2000s.
We would agree.
So conventional stats may have had him lower, but our stats had him higher. So I do want to give some respect to the man. Yeah, we've got, I mean, Brown is fantastic. Corey Davis is having a good season as well when he's been in there. Right, obviously, I think he missed a couple games for COVID.
True.
But, yeah, we have Brown in per play. We have him seventh, and we have Davis ninth among receivers. But a lot of that is play design. Listen, Arthur Brown is just a great designer of play-action plays, and Tennessee was phenomenal with play-action. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're phenomenal again with play-action this year. And I think that we can say now, it's been a long enough, that we can say this Ryan Tannehill being this good is not, it's not going to regress the way we thought it was. Like, he really is going to be this good, and I think in the long run, at least for the next couple of years. So the offense is well-designed. But, yeah, they have quality receivers, too, to get the ball to.
Aaron Schatz is with us from Football Outsider, so that actually leads me into my question. It was about Ryan Tannehill, and why do you think that this has simply worked with Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator? I mean, his numbers you mentioned and where he's ranked, his efficiency ratings as the quarterback since he took over. Why do you think it has worked, and why is it not going away?
Well, I mean, there is some suggestion, certainly, in looking at other players, that Adam Gase, his offenses in Miami and now with the New York Jets just kept players down, and that players have been more successful after they've left the Adam Gase offenses. I think that's part of it. But he's just really good at the play action. You know, he sells the fake well, and he's really good at hitting those receivers, and he's been accurate. So there's no question that Tannehill has been one of the better quarterbacks in the league for the first half of this year and the second half of last year.
Now, we talk about the offense and how good the offense is for the Tennessee Titans. Another side of the ball, special teams, not so good for the Tennessee Titans. And it's not just kicking with Steven Gostkowski, but when you do a deep study on Titans special teams, what do you think is causing some of these issues?
Yeah, the punting's been really bad also. I mean, we have both that worst value in the league on field goals, but they have the second worst value in the league on punting. And the thing is, field goal kicking is actually pretty inconsistent. Like, the fact that Gostkowski has missed kicks so far this year is not a great indicator of how well he's going to do the rest of the year. That's the good news. The bad news is punting is probably the most consistent part of special teams, and it's been a real problem for the Titans this year.
Yeah, especially with Brett Kern out with an injury.
Yeah, what have they gone through? Three punters?
Yeah, Kern.
But it's
Kern's
also
the
coverage. It's not just the punters themselves.
Right, right. And that's been something that we've talked about quite a bit. And then defense as well. Do you think it's the defense as a whole, or do you look at the defensive line, the secondary? You know, what do you think is causing some of the issues with the Titans defense?
Well, I'm not going to tell you that I've watched the Titans closely enough to be able to really break down where the problems are. I think the secondary has definitely, the cornerback position in particular, has had some issues, and I think that's where a lot of their third down problems come from. Right? Obviously, they've been, like, really bad on third downs. I think we have them 31st. We have Carolina as the only team that's been worse on third downs. The run defense has been okay. There's been a lack of pass rush, right? Obviously, the Beasley signing did not work. And Clowney's just got this really crazy record of getting lots of hurries but not sacks, and he's much better against the run. He may be more of a quality run defender than he is a pass defender. But I think the cornerback position is just thinking of when I've watched the Titans this year is where I think the biggest weakness has been.
Aaron, appreciate the visit as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good, guys. FootballOutsiders.com if people want to check out more content.
There you go, FootballOutsiders.com. You just heard the man, Aaron Schatz. We do appreciate him joining us. We'll discuss on the other side some things you just heard. We'll do our own little deep dive into some things that he just threw out there about the Titans. But right now, I'm going to do a deep dive on my friends over at Cool Springs MD and tell you all about them, because I've been going there for years. They've been helping me for years, and they've been helping a lot of you in this area over the years. They've been around in our market since 2007. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board certified physician over there. His wife Daphne is the registered nurse, and their experienced staff would love to improve your quality of life. And who doesn't want that as we all get older? Things start happening, and they can address when those things start happening, whether it's hormone replacement therapy. You can talk to them about that. Maybe you've been feeling off, you've been feeling sluggish, or having mood swings. These are all things that your levels could affect. And if your levels are going down, which tends to happen as we get older, and sometimes they drop at an alarming rate, they can check that and address that and get you going in the right direction. Face and body rejuvenation is something, once again, as we get older, you can look into. Weight loss management, which is always important, but especially in 2020. We get it. You've been out of your routine. Maybe your gym, your local gym shut down for months, and you're out of that routine, and you just never got back into it when it reopened. Well, that's okay. Maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds. You'd like to get rid of them. Go talk to them about that. They've got people and programs that can get you headed in the right direction. These are all some of the things that they house under one roof. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation, dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Good stuff from Aaron Schatz, FootballOutsiders.com. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. Greg Marshall out at Wichita State. He resigns, forced out, fired, whatever you want to talk. Conduct, unbecoming, a lot of physical, mental abuse, verbal abuse, a lot of things surrounding Greg Marshall. Going to make $7.75 million to go away over the next 6 years. Somebody else has resigned. The architect of the Chicago Cubs finally ending the curse back in 2016. Theo Epstein, their president of baseball operations, has resigned.
His contract went through the end of next year, and I think a lot of people looked at the roster, probably including Theo Epstein, and thought,
I mean, some lean years.
This was the last hurrah this last year. And, of course, they lost shockingly to the Marlins in the first round in two straight. Of course, hey, it's only two games, but they didn't get it done. And there's so many big decisions to make. I think he was sort of, hey, let's get out one step ahead of the posse. I don't think they were that sad to see him go. I think there was some – they're at a crossroads, right? So the question now is – what does Theo Epstein do next, right? If he doesn't ever do another thing, he will have been the guy that led the Red Sox and the Cubs to the first world titles they had in decades and generations, right? It's Hall of Fame kind of stuff, right? So does he want another challenge? Does he want to step away for a couple years? I was reading Jason Stark and Ken Rosenthal on this morning, because they speculated this was coming. Also, you have the Mets, you have the Phillies looking for leaders, right, to take over their operation. Hey, please fix us. You know, we got problems. They have a lot of money. Does he want one of those challenges? They even speculated maybe he sits back and puts an ownership group together and starts looking at an expansion team, which would be more of the Dave Dombrowski route. So this is interesting.
Do you guys want to know what he's going to do?
I do. I want to know what's he going
to
do.
Some people.
Is he going to join the Nashville Stars with Dombrowski?
That's what I'm going to tell you. That's his next challenge. He wants to win, bring a World Series to Nashville.
Wouldn't that be something?
He wants to team up with this group. He wants Major League Baseball in Nashville, and he wants to win a title in Nashville. So he is going to put all of his efforts and his concentration on Nashville. Now, that's what I'm being told. And I believe that. I really do. And I also just made that up. But okay. It sounded really good.
It sounded good.
Well, Darren, you will agree with me on this because you were standing right next to me. You and I, we can tell a story that is true. When the winter meetings were in Nashville one year, I think the year was 2002, if I had to guess. Maybe 2003. I think 2002, though.
I think it was 2002.
We were in the Opryland Hotel. He had just been hired, Theo Epstein. At age 28.
He looked like he was 14.
We were standing right next to him. We met him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we were like, oh, my gosh. Like, he had a huge throng of people around him from Boston, as you can imagine. The people actually found him was a miracle in the Opera Lane Hotel. And, of course, right after that, I think, Darren, we saw Jason Stark just sitting under one of those cascade or whatever, in the Cascades or whatever.
Yep.
With all the trees and plants.
In the Delta.
In the Delta or whatever. We're like, hey, that's Jason Stark. Let's go talk to Jason Stark. And, you know, 15 years later, or however long it's been, 18 years, we're still
That's how
still
you guys
friends.
Met Jason?
That's
yes.
how we met Jason Stark,
yes.
yeah.
Oh, wow.
We had, Willie was carrying it, like, literally the recorder, like the tape recorder, you know.
Yeah.
And you push play and record. I mean, that's
right.
How you did it.
You didn't just do your phone like you do now.
Hello, Mr. Stark. my name is Willie Donick, and this is Darren McFarland, and we do a radio show here in Nashville, and we love baseball. Will you talk with us? I was like, sure. And, I mean, you know, the rest is history. I mean, he could not have been a nicer guy, sat there and talked with us for a long time. We did an interview with him for a long time. And next thing you know, he started doing weeklies with us. That's literally how it started. But that you're right. We did. We saw Theo Epstein there, and he looked like he was 14.
He did.
I mean, he was easy to spot once you saw the group of people, because you just look for the guy that looked completely out of place and looked very, very, very young. That was Theo Epstein.
And 2 years later, the Red Sox won the World Series for the first time in 86 years. And then fast forward to 2016. Close your ears, Darren. Sorry. he leads the Cubs to the first world title that they had had since 1907. So two big notches on the belt. So what he does next is going to be a very, very interesting story. And where do the Cubs go from here?
Yeah. The two winter meetings that I've gotten to go to, I think it's been two of them that have been here. I was walking through one time and witnessed him. I don't know if he was talking to an agent or another GM, who it was.
Maybe it was Danny Evans.
Could have been. No, could've I would have known. I would have known Danny Evans. But I was like, huh. I wonder what I'm witnessing right now. Theo Epstein doing business. Because I mean, you see that during these winter meetings all over the hotel. There's things going down. There's trades being worked out. There's contracts being worked out. That's the cool part. When you have that type of access to the winter meetings, is you just see these meetings everywhere.
I'm just going to go. This is what I know was yesterday. I'm just going to let you know. This is what I know. If he does join this group to Nashville, then we are getting Major
Game
League
on.
Baseball.
Oh, game on.
We're getting Major League Baseball. Like, it is coming to Nashville. Like, we will stop speculating and we will just say it is game on. They're going to figure this out, and there's a Major League franchise that's coming to Nashville. Whether it's going to be startup or somebody's moving here. But if he joins this group, it's game on in Nashville. That's what I know.
You'd have an architect of, you know, the Red Sox and the Cubs, and then an architect of another guy that was associated with the Red Sox, but the Marlins, and two very good former GMs. I would say that would be a pretty good sign if they were on the same team.
No doubt. All right, let's talk about Aaron Schatz and what he was talking about with the Titans special teams, or lack of, because he said it's putrid. It's absolutely awful. There's basically nothing they're doing on special teams that is good. And this is what we're going to talk about a little bit later when we do our rankings. And we're going to go a little bit different, because obviously they're looking at things a little bit differently than us. But we're going to go on the premise that Pittsburgh and Kansas City, in no particular order, are the top two teams in the league, and then we're going to rank everybody today from there. And what's interesting, because it's a hodgepodge, there is a lot of teams that you look at, and it is, I mean, it's going to be week to week. Like, we could probably do this exercise every week, and in fact we should, and just keep, you know, your sheet of paper every week. Let's put week 11 and week 12, label them, and see how much it shifts from week to week. Like, a prime example is this week, right? I mean, the loser of this game is going to do a big tumble. A big tumble. Whatever list of teams you have there, whoever loses this Titans-Ravens game at 6-4 is going to shoot way down the list. I mean, way down the top 10 list of even your 10 or all your outsiders, your bubble teams, right? Because I have all kinds of bubble teams, too. And that's where we are in this NFL season. But how are you going to fix some of that? When we talk about, we've been talking about their woes. How are you going to fix special teams, which has been bad all season? How is it going to get better? I mean, I guess is, you know, they say the proverbial switch that most people tell us does not exist, that Gostkowski's going to flip it and all of a sudden he's going to be perfect the rest of the way. I guess that could happen.
You know, it was interesting what he said there. He said that your past
doesn't necessarily reflect
mean what you're going to do in the coming weeks. That's probably the best argument that you could make to keep Gostkowski, even though I still, when we're watching him every week, I just wonder, is it time to give somebody else a shot? I think I'm there mentally, but we'll see. But that was interesting to hear him say statistically that's the case. And he said punting is harder to fix. I would say, though, that if they get Brett Kern back, you feel better. But as he pointed out as well, it's not just the punter. The punting game is
coverage.
The coverage as much as the punter. The blocking, obviously. So, you know, the question was brought up, is it time to start using starters on special teams? And honestly, Mike Vrabel surprised me. He said, hey, we're looking at everything. We might have to do it, you know. And so it's mystifying.
He didn't really say we might have to do it. He didn't really say that. He was just very noncommittal on everything. And we did.
He didn't dismiss it and say, no way, we're not doing that. you know, I got the sense that he was considering everything because he's at wit's end, right? He understands the value of special teams. They've taken a lot of pride in being a good special teams unit, and they're awful.
They're atrocious. And the thing that's crazy is they signed Nick Dezumbar, right? You know, who's a known special team specialist. Thank you. Darren Bates, they brought him back, who's been a staple in special teams for the Titans the last few years. They brought him in. So, I mean, it's not like they don't have some of these guys that this is what they're known for, that you know, they are those special teams guys. But for whatever reason, it's been bad. And so I don't know. I don't know if putting starters on there, what that's going to fix. Is it the coaching? You know, is it truly Craig Aukerman? Is that going to be the fix, or is he going to ride this out, you know, through the end of the season and then decide?
For all the people that say, well, okay, fine. Yeah, you change right now, you're going into week 11. What are you going to do? What are you going to get? Okay, that may be true. But couldn't you say the same thing a couple of weeks ago when you made 12 moves in the same week? I mean, that was week 9. Oh, so is it okay in week 9 to make a ton of changes, but in week 11 it's like, okay, it's probably too late to do anything. What are you going to do now at this point? Well, they've already proven that they're not afraid to try to fix something.
Right.
So why would it be too late for the people out there? Yeah, but if you do that, who are you going to get? Who are you going to get that's better? Because, right, that's one – Willie knows this. Jace, that is one thing that has always bothered me when people say, oh, what are you going to do that's better? Well, there's – people do it all the time. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, what do you mean? Sometimes standing pat is way worse than not doing anything else. And like I said, sometimes you try to fix it, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. But guess what? Sometimes you do, and it does work. So if this is proven, what they've been doing all year has not been working, right? Special teams has been a disaster all year. It hasn't been working. Whether it's kicking field goals, kicking extra points, punt coverage, kickoff coverage, anything. Their return game, snapping the ball, anything that encompasses special teams has been a nightmare. Kind of like the Minnesota Vikings. Did you see Zimmer last night when they botched the extra point late in the game? I mean, he was going nuts
right
on the special teams coach because, as they pointed out in the broadcast, their special teams has been a disaster.
Yeah, the long snapper. It was awful.
Right. I guess it's 2 weeks in a row. He's
skipped it on the carpet.
Yeah, he's. It's amazing that they've come out with two victories when it could have cost them games. And, oh, by the way, their special teams, you could say, has cost them games.
Right.
So why would you think that anything's going to change if you've stayed the course the whole time with the same thing in place? Why do you think it's going to change course now? And if it's not going to change course, do you think you can get by enough to be one of those seven teams to be playing in January when your special teams is this bad?
Well, and I mean, head coaches get fired all the time because people above them go, we've tried this, it's not working, so we're going to make a change. It's
like
not
Will Muschamp. Like, what's the point? Honestly,
right.
I can make a better case for that. Like, what's the point now? Like, South Carolina's season, what are you doing at this point? I mean, you couldn't wait till the end of the year to say goodbye, but no, they just said, you know what, we're pulling the plug in the middle of November. Like,
well,
done.
I mean, so and who knows what that does for the rest of the year. I mean, they may win some games that they're not supposed to because it's just a different type of motivation. I mean, I know it's a little bit different, but when the Predators got rid of Peter Laviolette, I think we would all agree that every problem that they had was not all his fault, was not all on him. But David Poile identified he had to make a change. He did. Things got a little bit better. They made the playoffs. They continue to make changes. Made a lot of changes to the roster. We'll see what happens. With the Titans, they have to look at it as, okay, it's week 11, but you're very much in a division battle. You can still win this division. These next two games are extremely important when it comes to that and comes to seeding, because right now you're not even in the playoffs. If you fire the special teams coach, maybe it makes a difference. Maybe it doesn't, but how are you going to know? If you really feel like that is an issue, which it is, then I think it's on Mike Vrabel to just really have a soul search and say, okay, I got to do something different. Maybe what you do different doesn't work, But if you just stand there and sit on your thumbs and don't try anything, I think that that's just as bad.
Well, I think in fairness, it's not like they haven't tried anything, right? They're not doing it exactly the same way every week. And some of it is forced because of injuries and things like that. I'm thinking of one guy in particular, Dane Cruikshank, right? He's a special teams guy that they haven't had. So it's not like they're rolling the same guys out there every week and having the same results. They're tweaking, they're tinkering. You're asking, is it time for a major change? And that's the guy leading the unit, right? Is it time to just change the coach and let somebody else try to do something? It's a fair question at this point. When you're as poor as they are, I think all things have to be considered, which falls into the category, too, of Gostkowski, right? You'd feel a lot better if they're just making the field goals.
Oh, yeah. You'd feel a ton better, but they're not. And, you know, I would say a lot of that it has to be
That's
on.
That's a pretty big if statement.
Yeah.
Right, because there's no guarantee, as Aaron Schatz pointed out, there's no guarantee that the next guy is the solution, right? Last year it certainly wasn't the case. They changed kickers a bunch of times, and nobody was the solution.
Yeah.
The only solution was just score a touchdown every time so you don't have to kick a field goal.
Yeah.
And Ryan Succop was awful, even though we know there was some sort of injury, and now he's not. So is it simply just that he was hurt, or was it coaching? You know, what it was?
I don't think there's any question that the injury was the issue with Succop, because everything before and everything after, he's been very consistent.
Well, I miss Succop. I think a lot of people do.
Things you never thought you would say.
Well, he was so solid for so long. I mean,
yeah.
How could you not say that?
He has been very good with Tampa. He's had his misses. But going back to what you said, you know who I thought of when you were saying that, Chase? I thought of Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, because isn't that kind of where the fan base is right now? It's like, yeah, you know, like we've seen what this quarterback looks like under center. Like, what do you prove it at this point? You've lost four in a row. It's going the wrong direction. So you just think that trotting out the same thing is going to all of a sudden, that we've already seen this is what it is going to all of a sudden give you different results? I mean, that's why I think everybody's screaming, like, just try something else. Not named Maurer or Shroud, right? Just something else by the name, preferably last name Bailey.
And on the other hand, you can say he pulled the trigger quick on the defensive line coach, right? That was pretty radical.
Yep.
He just hired the guy. He canned him four games in. So he has been willing to do that.
Maybe that was his version of a coach in a pay cut.
Well, that's one way to cut the guy's pay.
Because his explanation yesterday really didn't come over very well.
No.
Remember, he had just finished the press conference when we talked with Vince, and you know, the book's not completely written on that, and it's, you know, there could be some things done here. Do we have that clip, by the way, Elijah? Do you have that handy? He's basically saying, yeah, I mean, Blake Topmeyer, his article was spot on. I mean, it was good. Whew. Yeah. But, you know, things can change. You know, these contracts are tricky and lengthy. We'll get back in there and look them over again, and you never know. This narrative could change. And it's like, Jeremy, are you just sitting here telling everybody, like, yeah, now that this article has come out and exposed this and this has become a big deal, we're going to revisit and see if they've had a change of heart. That doesn't make anybody feel any better. The bottom line is there were eight coaches on your staff that were asked to do the right thing, and they said no. Like, that's a problem. Now, a lot of this is very phony, right? Because if Tennessee was, what's the record right now? 3-4? Is that what they, or what are they? What are they? 2-4? What are they? Plus four in a row? If it was the opposite, if they were 4-2, 5-1, probably nobody would care, right? If we're just being honest. If they were 5-1, nobody would care. Or if their offense was like Ole Miss's offense, nobody would say a word about Chaney. You know, it'd be like,
they've won two games.
They're 2-4.
He's got the right 2-4. But if their offense was really, really good, really fun, and they were having success, Probably nobody would say anything. But
I think they would say something, but it just wouldn't have.
Well, there would be some, yes, because it's still the right thing to do.
I mean, it's
but
still,
I'm saying
still.
Don't be phony. There's a ton of fans that would be like, yeah, you know, that's their right.
They would rationalize
things are good. Yeah. That's their right to say no. Look, you know, they don't have to. There would be, right? There would be fans that would do it because they don't care about anything else other than winning, whether it's the right thing or not the right thing. But you compound with their offense, is there's nothing special about their offense. It's very pedestrian at best. Their record's 2-4. And then this story comes out. It's like it's easy for everybody to pile on. But it would be, I think, it would be pretty phony if they were doing well. But it seems like, by the way, he's going Garantano again this week. So I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of coaches that are, you know, it's just hard, I guess, in some cases to make some change. It's like they pick and choose. You're right. Defensive line coach, drastic. Cut the long snapper. Vic Beasley. Jonathan Joseph. Cut. You're out of here. Maybe that was easy, and then there's other things. Everybody's going, okay, but what about this? And you're like, yeah, we're good. Yeah, we'll just keep doing this. It'll change. Just trust me. I don't know about that. I don't know if people really sign up for that. All right, we'll come back. Chris Sanders will join us at the top of the hour. We'll come back and wrap up the second hour next. Anybody feel good about the game on Sunday? Like Gary Stein up in Baltimore said, he thinks the Titans are going to win. Anybody else agree with him as we sit here on a Tuesday?
I'm still coming around to it. I was encouraged at how well the Patriots ran the ball. You heard Gary say that there's some key injuries, Calais Campbell being the key one, that have really put a Ravens defense that is outstanding against the run behind the eight ball a little bit. That bodes well. The other thing that might be, in theory, a good matchup for the Titans, the Ravens don't have the array of receivers and weapons that can pick you apart, right? Lamar Jackson is not a pick-you-apart, spread the field like Phillip Rivers did the other night, which was surprising and alarming, and Joe Burrow did or earlier, and Ben Roethlisberger. He's not the same type of player. So maybe this offense is as much potential as it has, and as explosive as it has been, because it's different, maybe it's a little bit better matchup for the Titans defense, but that's just a theory, right? But the fact is, the Ravens offense has not been nearly what it's been the last season. It's not the same offense, but I don't know. I still think this is a very tough matchup.
Oh, of course it's a tough matchup. And the thing that worries me the most is when you look at the playoff matchup earlier this year, the two guys that made such a difference in that game were, you know, Logan Ryan and Jarrell Casey. They're not here anymore. So who's going to be the next to step up and help them, you know, try and stop this offense, albeit not the same that maybe it has been, which was to be expected. I'm not really surprised by that. Now it's how can you evolve? How can Greg Roman evolve it? How can Lamar Jackson evolve in his career? I mean, I seem to always go back to the Russell Wilson comparison of Russell Wilson has evolved his game, and that's why he's been so successful. He's learned that he has to change with the league. Can Lamar Jackson do the same? With all that said, though, with the woes that the Titans defense has had this year, I still am very nervous about this matchup.
I heard Charles Robinson on with Robbie and Rex Road this morning in the 9 o'clock hour, and he said, because you asked Gary Stein about Greg Roman, and Greg Roman's a guy that's been tossed around there for years, you know, getting a head coaching job. And he said that Greg Roman, the knock on him is once you figure him out, he has a hard time adjusting. In other words, once you figure out what they're all about, he has a hard time kind of putting in new wrinkles. You know, it's like, here's what I've got. This is my system. This is my playbook. And the picture he was painting, at least this is the way I took it, was, okay, it's great for a while because people have a hard time figuring it out. And then once they figure it out, he has a hard time throwing new stuff in there, right? It's like, hey, this is what it is, and this is what I've always used, and this is what, you know, I'm not going to veer away from this. And I thought that was interesting. And so the question is, because he said people started to figure it out in San Francisco. And so the question is, are people starting to figure it out in Baltimore?
Fair theory. I think there are coaches that I think fit that category. And sometimes they go somewhere else, they start over, and they come up with a new formula at that point. But it's been a theory that we've had since the summer. I think a lot of people have thrown that out there, and it's more directed at Lamar Jackson, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is can he evolve and can he become a better passer and find new ways to beat you as teams start playing it more, they see it more. I think it's a difficult thing for any coach to do. And statistically, it's happening right now. And there have been some key injuries, too, that have made it tougher. So if the Titans are going to win, I think that's got to be a big part of the formula. I don't know that it's going to be like last year where every single key play, they got the stop on the fourth down, they got the turnovers, all of that. I think there's just going to have to be more stops. But that's the thing. It just that defense doesn't have a lot of confidence right now, the Titans. So it really would help if they could come out and get a couple stops early to start building a little bit more belief, because it just has not happened at all. They never stopped the Colts last Thursday. They just never stopped them, except for the two fourth downs were huge. But in terms of just going out there, shutting them down, they forced one punt, and it was the last possession of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing that was so tough is they'd get all these third down stops, which has been, you know, difficult for them this year. They haven't been able to do, and it's like, all right, here you go. Oh, wait, they're going for it on fourth down because they know you probably can't stop them, you know, two in a row. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, it was, you know, they were fourth and one, fourth and short, but they couldn't get that stop. And that's just, that will take any type of confidence away from a defense, from a player. And now when you're going up against a quarterback that is as athletic and dynamic as Lamar Jackson, with the other weapons that they have, I mean, if it could get ugly early. Now, if they get on him early and they get a couple of those stops like you're talking about, then who knows? Who knows what that does? But I think this defense is just so shaky confidence-wise that it's just a pendulum swing.
But how much confidence do you think the Baltimore offense has lost a little bit over the last few weeks? Now, they, you know, before we, you know, bury them, what's the Nick Saban quote that we have always on the hotkeys? But
dead and buried and gone.
Dead and buried and gone. They did go to Indy and win, right? So they played a good second half offensively. So they're not that far removed from a very good performance offensively. So they can still do it. But I have to believe there's a little bit of why are we not, why is this not as easy as it was last year, in their mind. So I think the beginning of the game is going to be important. You don't want to get behind if you're the Titans here. You got to come up with some stops early and get off to a good start.
Well, if you watch the game, it's their defense is what really won the game for the Colts against the Colts. They really were having issues. Now, that granted, they did have the fumble, you know, at the 2 yard line. Gus Edwards fumbled it when they were going in for a touchdown, and Indy got that. So that was a big break for them. But you know, the play that turned everything was the Jonathan Taylor fumble, and they picked it up and ran 65 yards. And the one that we talked about all week, Phillip Rivers, you know, going backwards and falling down and still trying to attempt to make the tackle. But that's really what turned the game. They really weren't that impressed. When I get it, Indianapolis's defense is really good, as we know. But it's not like it still was a slow, methodical kind of paper cut, you know, death by paper cuts.
Much better in the second half than the first half.
Yes. But it wasn't like it was not. It wasn't anything in dominating fashion, you know. Like I said, I mean that thing was very close to getting away from them until the Jonathan Taylor fumble happened. And yes, it happened, and they scooped and scored. But that play really changed everything. I think they had another play, too, that set up the Gus, because he did get another opportunity to make up for the fumble, which he punched one in deep. And I think it was another, yet again, another turnover.
Well,
or
there
something.
Was the interception that was deemed an interception. That was
That's it.
They definitely caught a break.
They caught a break.
That was a key play.
That's exactly right. That's what it is. You're right.
It's also worth noting that while we've talked a lot about the Titans' special team struggles, Baltimore is anything but that. They have some of the best special teams in the game. We know Justin Tucker is about as automatic as they come as a kicker. So that is a facet that is heavily in the Ravens' favor here on paper. Special teams is no contest. And that's not just the kicker. It's all across the board. Baltimore has excellent special teams.
Yep. So the question is, how can the Titans slow down the Ravens, and how can they score enough on the Ravens to stay in this game? I mean, what is the formula? If you look at last year's playoff game, it's very clear. I mean, run the ball, right? Pound the ball. Pound the football. Or, actually, let them think that you are going to pound the football, and what did they do early on? They were throwing bombs, right? Yeah. They were throwing the ball.
Khalif Raymond had that big.
You had the Jonnu Smith. One. You had the Khalif Raymond. The Jonnu Smith, what came after the turnover.
Yeah.
Had the Khalif Raymond play. Yeah, right. So maybe that's what it is. And then take control with the running game.
I think at this point it's whatever you can get going and get into a rhythm with. That's what they're going to do. I was just looking.
They had the big timely stops on defense.
Sure.
They get timely stops in this game. They haven't been able to do it this year.
Nope. They have not.
The over-under is 48.5. So do we think this is just going to be an offensive shootout? You're not going to have much defense?
I'll believe that when I see it, an offensive shootout. But the other thing I'm wondering is this a time of – what does the time of possession look like? And is this a low possession game like a lot of the Titans games have been, where the defense is on the field, it's bend but don't break, and you have 10 play drives, 10, 12, 8, 9, 13, and the Titans offense is sitting over on the other side. Can they keep the ball a little bit more, keep their defense off the field a little bit more? That to me is an interesting stat that we've been tracking now for 3 or 4 weeks. The time of possession has been heavily in the opposition's favor. The Titans have slipped to, I think, 29th in the league in overall time of possession. It's really gone down since they were started 5-0.
Weren't they really kind of bend but don't break in the playoff game?
Absolutely, they were.
Baltimore was moving it up and down the field in between the 20s, right?
Absolutely they were. No question. Bend but don't break could work.
It worked against the Patriots. Timely stops and you get the turnovers, and that's one thing. You know, they just haven't been able to do that this year. They're not getting the turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. It's worked in the past, but
you have to be good in the red zone. You have to win the turnover battle, which the Titans, that's the best thing they've done, right? Their turnover margin is still outstanding. Now, when you know, a block punt technically, I don't think is a turnover. But it's like a turnover. A 17-yard punt is not a turnover, but it's like a turnover. So, still though, if you look at turnover margin, the Titans have done well in that area. Where they have fallen off, especially defensively, is the red zone. Right? That's another element of bend, don't break. If you're going to bend, you got to hold them to field goals and not touch. You can't give up touchdowns. Last week, it was cash in left and right. Couldn't keep them out of the end zone.
Come back and talk to Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders to start the third hour. Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.